This is Pop Fiction Women. I'm Corinne.
I'm Kate, and we're complicated.
Blunt.
Total boss.
But sometimes a mess.
Opinionated.
But never boring.
And in this podcast, we're discussing the complicated women of the best books, TV, and movies.
Along with the complicated women behind the scenes. We are doing something a little different. A new type of show. We're going to let you have a sneak peek behind the curtain of how we choose what we're going to cover on Pop Fiction Women. So usually one of us will read or watch something that we both immediately love, and it's a done deal. Or if we don't really know it, if it's new, we let a third party kind of tip us over, like Buzz on Instagram, as we've talked about with Bridgerton, and also I Care a Lot. Mm-hmm. Or if something's getting a lot of critical acclaim or nominated for awards, that will tip us over, or even, you know, just a really passionate email or DM. But the truth is, a lot of good content gets left out, even that we might both want to do, both be interested in, both see the value in, but we just can't cover everything. So right. That's what today's episode is really all about. We're going to bring our private conversations into the public on the podcast and try to convince the other person that we need to cover something in our new show called Convince Me To. We're starting with Convince Me To Watch, WandaVision for me, and I Hate Susie for you.
I feel a lot of pressure here because as a litigator, I feel as if I should have all like my persuasive points laid out. Like I feel a real sense of responsibility to win this, convince you.
To win this.
You know me, I picture, it's like a contest. Everything's a contest. Meanwhile, I think I've already heard such wonderful things about WandaVision. I'm sure whatever you're going to tell me, I'll be convinced. But either way, I don't know. I feel as if this is, I got to get all my good points in.
Oh my goodness, that's very interesting. I did not feel that way. I'm going to talk about WandaVision because I really want to talk about WandaVision. But if you don't watch it or like it, it's kind of your loss. It's not really my loss.
I get it. And I think of it as I must win. You see how this goes?
Yes, that's so interesting. Oh my goodness.
I know. It's a little psychological study between us already off the gate.
Exactly. What's your damage? We didn't build that into this one, but clearly we're starting out with it.
Exactly. Now I want to hear about WandaVision, and I want to hear about it from not someone who's not my husband and my young boys.
That is kind of the point of why I wanted to do it. So yes. I have to say, I am not a Marvel person. I have nothing against them. I actually think I've seen Iron Man. I think there's more than one, but I saw the first one. I don't know. And I thought it was great. I loved it. I like Robert Downey Jr. They are obviously a franchise that's doing so much, especially in comparison to some of the other franchises. They're doing so much as far as breaking gender stereotypes, embracing racial inclusion or inclusion of all other members of society that don't look like what we consider the norm for superheroes. WandaVision blends the style of classic sitcoms with the Marvel comic universe, in which Wanda Maximoff and Vision, two superpowered beings living their ideal suburban lives, begin to suspect that not everything is as it seems, which is very vague but actually completely perfect. And the amazing thing is you don't know what's going on. We watched it week by week. It was torture getting through a week waiting to find out what was going to happen next. And we watched it as it came out. And I was so on the edge of my seat. And I know there are some things floating out there, but I kind of really loved finding all of it out week by week. And I really don't want to spoil anything, even if people wouldn't think it's a spoiler. So the first few episodes showcase Wanda, who is a witch, a superhero, and Vision, who's a synthesoid superhero, living in a very domestic suburban life. These episodes intentionally invoke decades of sitcoms, starting with the 50s or 60s, it's Bewitched, I Dream of Jeannie, there's Dick Van Dyke, there's all these little, little nods. And I guess it's probably the same as Marvel. I'm sure there's a lot in every episode that little winks to things about Marvel that you would know. But no one in my family knew them. And so we weren't missing anything. Same thing with the sitcoms. Obviously, my kids don't have any idea what those sitcoms were like and didn't need to sort of watch the evolution of it. So then the next week it goes to like the 70s, the 80s. There was a lot of Too Close for Comfort, Growing Pains, the 90s.
So awesome.
Yeah, they start to break the fourth wall like The Office does.
And, oh my God.
Yeah. And as far as I know, again, I'm certain that there are people that saw all sorts of Easter eggs or hints and references to Marvel, but I saw nothing. And there certainly is nothing like the trademark action sequences, battles, bombs. Nothing is happening like that. These really do kind of look like a weird like episode of a sitcom you were once watching. And
yeah, you know, my husband actually said, to your point, like he, of course, knows all the Marvel stuff, but doesn't know a lot of the sort of older sitcoms. And he said the same as you, like you didn't need to. And he actually felt like Dick Van Dyke, he used an example. He's like, I've never seen that show in my life. And yet somehow watching this, I kind of got a sense of it. And like they did a great job, even for someone from his perspective who doesn't know the sitcom element. So you're all saying the same thing, which is you don't, there's so many different things you can get out of the show, even if you don't know the Marvel or you don't know the sitcom.
And I imagine if somebody did know, they might even think it was even more wonderful than I did, which seems impossible because I really loved it. but also every week, like for four straight weeks, every time we were like, what is happening? The show like would end and be like, what's going on? You just don't have any idea. It really is structured like a sitcom. Like they have the boss and his wife over for dinner one night and she's spinning plates and trying to put together food with her magic, but also, and he's accidentally walking through walls. So it's this crazy offbeat thing, but also very normal. And that's the whole episode. Like, you know, the foibles of having your boss over for dinner and like it doesn't go well in the order takeout, and you know it's just like nothing happens, but somehow you believe and trust that it will, that something is going to happen. And God, let me tell you, the ending, first of all, the ending delivers on all of the things that you expect from Marvel, you know, explosions, effects, you know, battles and good and evil and all these kind of crazy things. So the end delivers on that. But the way you get there without having lost that feeling of like this show is really about domestic life. And it's about domestic life. It's about love. It's about motherhood. It's about the suburbs and a commentary on what people find appealing and or offensive or revolt, you know, like rebel against for the suburbs. And it's also, as I said before, about grief and loss and pain. And now that's not a spoiler to anyone who knows anything about the Marvel universe, but I did not. And so a lot of that grief and loss and pain, because something happens before the show even starts that anyone would know if they know the Marvel universe, but I did not. And so all of that was really a real revelation to me. And
which I didn't know either. I told you, that's why I didn't know it was a show about grief. And I actually specifically said to my son, oh my God, as I was doing this research, I'm like, oh my God, so WandaVision's about grief? And he's just like, what? Where have you been? Because like, to your point, like everyone, that even is something that's known before you even start watching this show about Wanda and Vision. And I was just like, I didn't know any of this.
No.
They're just laughing at me. Like, you live under a rock. But
Well, I live under that same rock. But I'm here to tell you that even if you live under that rock, it doesn't matter. It's so, the story is so beautifully told. And by the way, it tracks the, because as we're saying, whatever happened that I won't give away, even if you know it, is something bad happens before the show starts. So what's the first stage of grief? Denial. So of course it starts out as if that bad thing hasn't happened. And it just, they're here in the suburbs and they're loving their lives together. And it's so sweet. And they have this cute little house and you know that something's not right, but I had no idea what it was. Now your kids definitely had better idea of what it was than I did, but it just sort of unfolds all of that story, which is amazing that they could tell a story that could entertain both someone who knew everything and someone who knew nothing about the Marvel right. world. And so they gave us that backstory without ever taking someone else out of the story, which is just so deftly done. It's really, really amazing. But as with you and your argument, the most revolutionary aspect of this show is Wanda herself, mm-hmm. our complicated woman. And really what makes her fascinating is that it all kind of stems from the fact that she is a Marvel superhero, because the things that make that unusual are mundane. They're incredibly common. The fact that she is a wife, I don't know a lot about the Marvel universe, but I know it's not a big show about, you know,
motherhood.
Being married. Yeah, or being yeah. married.
Oh,
even.
You're right. Right? Sorry.
Because yeah. at first she starts out just married. And then she does. Yes, she gets pregnant. And she is pregnant on the show. And I'm like, is there any superhero who's ever been pregnant? Now, of course, she does pregnancy like a superhero. So it's not like they make her not a superhero. Her pregnancy lasts a day. And her childbirth is 15 minutes. And so obviously she does everything in a superhero fashion, but it is what she's doing is incredibly common and domestic and mundane, you know, just being married and having kids. And yet when you put it through Wanda's perspective and point of view, it's revolutionary. It's incredible to watch. And you don't even realize that you're watching something so incredible until you're seeing it. And you're like, oh my God, I've never seen a pregnant superhero. I've never seen a pregnant or a superhero whose babies won't sleep. I don't, you know, it's just, it's that what I love is hyper reality, right? It's real, but told in a way that isn't real, so that, you know, she's carrying her twins. She ends up having two boys and she carries them like floating. You know, I can't do that, but what she's doing is walking around because they won't sleep. And so that I've done.
That's so cool.
It is. It's really. And I don't know that I would have understood that any of that mattered until I was watching it. And I was like, holy shit, this is something I've never seen before. And usually what we're saying is, holy shit, I've never seen, you know, a woman masturbating. And you're like, that's really revolutionary. A woman being a mother is not revolutionary. But because it's Wanda, because it's mm-hmm. Marvel, because it's a superhero, it really is. And so it was just amazing to watch, and I felt stunned by the show all the time. But let me tell you, it's even when she gets past all of that, and when we really find out who the villain is, and I won't spoil that even if you know, wow. I mean, that, it. I guess I'll spoil it. It's a woman. And so you mm-hmm. have the good guy and the bad guy both being these complicated women, and they do not spare the character development on the villain. I mean, they give her a whole three-dimensional life. They give her a whole backstory. It is so good. And
I just knew it was a woman only from pictures, and I don't know anything about the character, but I have read a lot about Jack Schaefer, which we'll get to, but that's like her big thing, is making villains in superheroes more multidimensional, male and female. Give them stories, tell a complex villain. There's not just good or bad. So I love that. That sounds like she clearly did that here.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's amazing because the episode 8 is the penultimate episode. And I watched it like 4 times already. And I can imagine I'll watch it again. The last one too is really good. It's so powerful. But from our perspective on this podcast and what we love about complicated women, that second to last episode is so freaking good. And it starts out with the villain, and it starts out with her as a younger version of herself. And it's this moment where she has to choose kind of, is she going to be good or is she going to be bad? And you can see she really wants to be good, but it's just not her. And it's so, it's so incredible to watch it. And she's like, I want to be good. I promise I can be good. And everyone knows that it's not true. It's just not who she is. And, you know, it's arguable whether she's just saying that because she knows she's supposed to say that or whether she really does want it, but she can't do it. The fact of the matter is she can't, and she is just got this evil in her that she has to act on. And it's just so fascinating.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, and then also there's a world, and I won't, there's a another, like you cut away to other parts, the more Marvel, you know, kind of in the Marvel world where there's the people tracking and knowing about superheroes. And so those people out there think of Wanda as the villain. And so, but yet in Wanda's world and in the world you're watching when you're there, you're like, she's not the villain. She's the one who's in pain. She's our hero. She's the one we're rooting for. And so just the complexity of who's the bad guy, who's the good guy, who are we rooting for, who can you get behind? It's so complicated, and there's a piece of it in all of them. I think they've positioned them all as they could be the hero or they could be the villain, and they all believe what they're doing is the exact right thing to do. And this is why I've said once that it really is a commentary on the suburbs, because it's a huge giveaway, so I won't spoil it, but there is just an idea of when you are in this area, and we talked about this, or I talked about it with Alice in Wisdom, with We Can Only Save Ourselves, are the suburbs safe, or are you, when you're in the suburbs, are you safe or are you trapped? And and the true answer to that is both, because someone might feel safe and someone feels trapped. And it's not clearly one thing, and man, WandaVision delivers on coming through on that theme in many levels, on many levels. On
the complexity. Yeah, so that's what I had read her saying, that even with her own kids, that they are really obsessed with who, like a lot of kids, with who the good guys or the bad guys are. Mm-hmm. And she explains to them all the time, like every good guy can be a bad guy and vice versa. It's complicated, she said. but that's sort of lost on them. But she said that's one of the things she thinks can and should be explored in the future, which is that she hopes they'll move, and I think she's specifically here talking about the superhero movies, but towards the gray and towards complexity. And it sounds like she clearly nailed that in WandaVision.
She did. And it is, yeah.
I was going to say, I have seen a lot of the Marvel shows and movies because of my family, and some of them do this, but I do think that that's where they're going more towards. And I hope they do, for the reasons she said.
Yeah.
And for the reasons we love.
Yeah. And you can just see they're so convinced. You know, the villain and the hero are so convinced that what they're doing is the right thing, and they don't see all the things they're either ignoring or people that they're actually really hurting. And everybody experiences that, no matter whose side you're on, no matter who you're rooting for. Everybody gets exposed as, you think you're doing the right thing, but look at all of these other people or things or what you're affecting and who you're hurting. And it's really complex. It's really fascinating.
Did you see the Black Panther?
I did not, know.
Because she cites that one, and I agree with her, of Michael B. Jordan's like villain character as being sort of one of the more nuanced and complex than, is it really what's good or bad? Like, and I agree. I thought that was a great one. If you want to dip your toe further into true superhero movies, that one I would recommend. She does cite that as one of her favorites too, and I do agree with that.
I don't know
if that's Marvel or not. I don't know all the, you know, who's on whose side there, but anyway.
Yeah, no, I've heard the same thing about the nuance and complexity of that character.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And then one of the other themes that I found really interesting in this was, and it's not as big as the grief and the marriage, motherhood, partnership, protecting the ones you love versus, you know, sheltering them. It had to do with siblings. And this is, again, something in the Marvel universe. Wanda and her brother were orphaned at a very young age, and they are all they have. It just was very touching, and it was a complicated part of it. The way they use it in the show, it has a lot of spoilers, so I won't say, but that sibling dynamic, and just, I just love that extension of family. Family, like the people that you do anything for usually, or, and that also fuck you up, usually come to, or, you know, totally screw your mind are always about the family of origin, like your parents, or about the family that you make. And this, it doesn't really get talked about as much, and the siblings and how they can be there for you, but also can be a weakness and for someone to exploit.
We talk about that personally, Corinne.
We do.
So,
we do.
This already sounds interesting to me. Yeah. Point in WandaVision's favor again.
It was well done in this one. That was another another big draw for me. But honestly, Elizabeth Olsen.
I was just going to say, when are we just going to say Elizabeth Olsen? Because that was your lead. That's your Phoebe Waller-Bridge. It's close. It's close for me.
She is utterly captivating.
Yeah.
I mean, she's beautiful, but it's just something, I don't know, there's something about her. And I want to say star quality, but literally everyone has star quality that's on, you know, a show as big as this. There is just something completely mesmerizing about her that I just wanted to watch. Something about her voice, I don't know what it is. It's incredible. I wanted to watch everything. I was so obsessed.
Yeah, she is captivating. I don't know what it is either. I think her eyes, they're like, big and expressive. I don't know.
Yes, her eyes.
And I haven't watched. I'm just saying I've seen her in other things or just like photographs. There's something she draws, she wins. So.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. Maybe her big eyes. Her voice is definitely a big part of it. And the way she speaks, I don't know. I could watch her literally do anything. And she was really fascinating. And Catherine Hahn, who is
loves her.
Yes, plays Wanda's neighbor and partner in crime, is so good. And I also just love that, you know, she needs to do it for herself, I guess, because we now know Matthew McConaughey coined his own McConaissance. But I feel like Catherine Hahn is Rahanaissance. Oh my God, Rahanaissance. She just has broken out in ways that, you know, she's just at a time in her career and in her life when this is the time where you'd expect her to be going by the wayside. She's in huge commercial things. She's in indie stuff. She's in Marvel. I mean, she's just hitting such a stride at a time when you would expect her to be fading out. And she actually talked about it. I read an interview with her, and she was saying this as I was saying it offline with you. She is not this, you know, just do whatever and don't question anything. But then also she's not on the other end of the spectrum who's overthinking every single step of her career. She's just kind of like, I put one foot in front of the other and it has led me here. And that's so incredible. And I'm so grateful for all of it. And I'm like, how do you do that? How? How do you do that?
I don't know. I can tell you how, but I do it without any thought. And I'm not sure you want to go quite far as far as me.
Because that's not what she was saying. It's
no,
like she just, she,
not.
It's like she makes a decision after everything, like after everyone. It's whereas me, I'm like, I set on a path. I make the decision for the path. And then I'm like, okay, now here's all of my next 10 years or these are the milestones that I'm looking at. And she's like, look, I take this role. I like it. This is what I do with it. I figure out what I've learned. And then she lets all of that inform her next decision. So it's like she goes on autopilot and then stops quickly. And then, you know what I mean? It's more of that. It's more of like, don't question it once you've made the decision, but then question every big decision in between.
Right.
I'm a big fan of her. She is quite a gem. Quite a gem.
I love that you've just coined Renaissance.
That is so somebody's got to get that to her.
They do. That's right.
Yes. So.
Oh my gosh.
But again, as I said with I Hate Susie, if all of that doesn't convince you, you should just want to do everything or take in everything that Jack Schaefer puts out there for our What She Said.
Yes, I can agree with that. I'm now a huge fan of Jack Schaefer.
Oh my gosh. So do you know that she started out writing like straight rom-com and nothing was breaking out for her? Nothing was like coming together for her. And she used a high concept sci-fi idea called The Timer.
Mm-hmm.
And that movie got that movie made and it got into Tribeca. And that really kind of ended up being her pay dirt. That's what broke her in. And the timer is, do you know about this movie? It's a plain old fashioned love story. Like a woman wants to meet the one. She wants to find him. And the sci-fi hook is that there's a device that you can have implanted in your wrist. You like go to the Apple store, which did not feel too far-fetched for me. And they implant a little small timer in your wrist. And that timer tells you, you will meet your soulmate when this timer counts down.
Yeah. And she said, this is such a great concept.
Yeah. Well, and she said she got the idea from her brother was getting married and her mother had like a little automated clock. And it's like, yay, 72 days to the wedding. And it was this countdown clock. And it was the next day, it would be like 71 days. And she was not married or partnered and she was feeling like she wanted to meet the one. She was like, if I just had a clock, then I could relax. Okay. If it's going to, you can tell me it's going to be 5 years. That's cool. I'll be cool. But like, am I supposed to be looking every day? Am I missing them? What's going on? And so she thought, you know, the first premise was if I just had this clock that would tell me when it would happen, I could relax. And so, and enjoy it until then. And so that was what started the concept. Of course, it turns out terribly wrong and the movie gets more complicated because she gets her chip put in, but if your soulmate doesn't have his chip put in, then your timers can't go together.
That's a good point.
And she spots someone else's timer and she likes him, so she tries to orchestrate their timers to go off at the same, or to pretend like she's going to just run into him when his timer goes off. And so there's a lot of complication that she and nuance that she puts into that idea, but it's a pretty fascinating idea. But it's really a straight rom-com. It's really a straight, you know, girl wants partner for her life. She has everything else and now she wants a partner. And then that honed her voice for The Shower, which is a story about a baby shower where the guests find themselves under a meteor shower. And these meteors turn men into blood-hungry aliens, and women have to fight not only to save themselves, but also the world. So yeah. It was this mashup of things that got her, you know, that was where she found her voice, was this mashup. And it started with a little bit of a high concept hook in The Timer and then really took off in The Shower. And my quote is when she talked about The Shower and how she came to for that idea. And by the way, The Shower got her blacklisted, as we've talked about. A few other people we've talked about the blacklist for, most notably recently Jessica Knoll got a script on the blacklist, and how that really opens doors. I mean, in Hollywood, it's a insider's, you know, pot of gold. And so that getting The Shower on the blacklist was a huge jump for her. And that is what opened the door to so many other jobs and eventually got her into the Marvel universe, which is incredible as it is. But she says in The Shower, I was so motivated to disprove a lot of misconceptions about women and the action sci-fi genre, about the characterization of women on screen, about women behind the camera, about what female audiences are interested in seeing. I had this axe to grind and I really poured it onto the page. It was really gratifying when it landed on the blacklist. I wanted to prove I could write something funny with female characters and heart-pounding action. I couldn't get it down on the page fast enough. When you're frustrated with your regular life, you can use the page to exercise those demons and feelings. It can be cathartic. It was just hitting against the same walls in the industry. I felt like I was trying to put myself in different boxes and not being successful. I wrote The Shower for my own heart and my own authentic voice.
Oh, look at this.
And that, I know, and that was what got her to Marvel. And not only to Marvel, but being trusted with this WandaVision. What I love about WandaVision is it's two things mashed up, right? And that makes it so unexpected. When do you think of classic sitcoms with Marvel, right? Marvel is
never.
It's the opposite. They're almost the opposite. Yeah. A classic sitcoms in a house with your parents. and or your kids. And, you know, a Marvel is like literally in the sky and fighting. Yeah, and
I did not fully appreciate that mashup until I started researching this. Again, another thing my family made fun of me for. And that I just love that that's just a passion of hers too. Just like classic TV. She's just a huge fan. And I think that's really cool that she's able to merge those two universes.
Yeah, especially since she knew nothing about Marvel.
Yeah, no, yeah. I know. It's really crazy. Although, you know, what I thought was interesting is, maybe I shouldn't have poo-pooed. She's, you know, writing for, you know, Marvel. But I would have thought, you know, that maybe you'd feel more constricted in some ways trying to be, obviously with WandaVision, she didn't. But I was thinking even with Black Widow, I mean, that these characters are just so well established. Like,
right.
You know, but she said that it's actually the opposite, that when she said one might think these current projects afford her less creative autonomy than an indie project where she's at the helm. But she says within the parameters of the carefully crafted Marvel mythology, there is a kind of delicious amount of freedom. She said in the indie space, you have all this control, but you're pulling a boulder up a mountain for a year or 2 years. Whereas somewhere like Marvel, there's all this enormous infrastructure. And so there's no friction on feasibility. The limit is your imagination. That kind of freedom is almost euphoric. And I was like, oh, I guess so. I just would have thought it would have been the opposite, or that there's so much pressure too.
Yeah.
You know, with these fans that just,
oh my gosh,
you know,
yes.
They're just so rabid.
Said, right. She said she's not, there's certain fans that she's not afraid of offending.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
In the name of progress.
Yes.
But no,
I did
it's
read
true.
That too.
But I loved her, what you just read about, like when she's doing it all on her own, it's like pushing a boulder up a hill by herself. Now she has like a whole, you know, first of all, a wealth of knowledge of the universe that already exists that she can pull from, and she can take little, you know, she said she was like poring over comics and taking little tiny images, and especially for Vision, she was using those, and that delight and surprised people who got them because she was so deeply in it. But yeah, that somehow, and it makes sense in life, although it doesn't automatically, it doesn't make sense immediately, but it does seem like in life, sometimes you have to have some restrictions or structure to feel really free. When you have everything just a blank slate, it feels paralyzing. But when you can put some restrictions on it, there's actually can be more freedom. And that makes sense.
There's just a lot of money behind it too. I mean, the freedom.
Oh, absolutely.
Is also there too. I mean, that's a pretty, I would say, liberating part of it too. I mean, the fact that she got to write both Black Widow and Wanda. I mean, Natasha and Wanda are two in the comic universe, like two really strong women. There aren't that many others, honestly. Mm-hmm. And someone asked her if there was any, you know, secret to, you know, writing superheroes, you know, and they were comparing Natasha, who is Black Widow, who does not actually have any superpowers, which you might not know. I mean, she's just sort of a trained. Yeah. Natasha does not. Black Widow is just sort of a trained Russian kind of KGB type. She's like more Mortal Kombat type thing, but has no actual superpowers. Whereas Wanda does, and most of the Marvel characters do. But she said, but I think if there's any secret to writing superheroes is that the superpower and the ability is always the embellishment. It's always about the internal life of the character. And Natasha and Wanda are very different, but they both have really rich internal lives, and they're very complicated and flawed women, which is the best kind. And
yes, yay!
Really, that's what she's focused on, and that's why she's going to make this so memorable, both of these characters, because that's the way she sees it, which I think is really cool. And the last quote I have is just, she said, I choose to be part, this is like her sort of mantra, I choose to be part of projects that are about positive representation. We need to see women. We need to see people of color. We need to see nuanced experiences, and we need to see different perspectives on screen. I choose to work with people who are interested in changing perspectives for the better and putting a world on screen that is something we can aspire to and have conversations about, and moving in a direction that will create a world I hope will be better for my children. And I'm like, yes, if you my friend, are creating more things and comic book movies that so many people see with that kind of mantra, I think we're going to see a big shift for the better.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So my takeaway, I'm very interested in WandaVision here. I told you I've been getting a lot of pressure at home, but I knew you would make the case from a perspective that I think, you know, the Marvel fans I live with here, we're not
right.
Making as articulately as you.
I would discount that kind of enthusiasm from a Marvel fan because I'm like, well, I just don't get it. But
as a
non-Marvel person, there's so much there for you. And like I said, episode 8 is the real kicker when you find out who the villain is in the last one, but you find out about her development, and it's just a great show. And it is so interesting to see complicated women on so many levels, right? And how we are just really talking about complicated, meaning three-dimensional human beings, because this is a pretty wholesome show. There's no, you know, alcoholism. There's no sex. It is woman doing domestic things. And you're like, well, how is this going to be complicated? And yet it really is. We get to see so many different aspects of her life, her love for Vision, her childhood, her brother, the villain she's fighting against and what they're fighting for and what they each think they're accomplishing and who they're actually really hurting. And it's so good. It really is.
You know, when we interviewed Alicia Rye, do you remember at the end we asked her, what are you into or what are you watching or reading? She said WandaVision.
Oh, I don't
She said
remember.
WandaVision. But you, and I knew because they had just started it, I think, but my family meaning, but I didn't know it was written by, I didn't know Jack Schaefer, I didn't know it was a woman involved. Like, I knew what it was just because of my family, but yeah, right. she was so enthusiastic. I
there
feel
you
like
go.
She tipped us off.
Yes. Well, it's just funny, you know, like this whole podcast, that a complicated woman is really not one thing. And I love that there were some frightening similarities in the things that we talked about for both I Hate Susie and WandaVision. And yet I can't imagine them being any more different in tone and vehicle for the complicated woman. Mm-hmm. But yet there were so many of the same themes, grief, family issues, you know, discovering who you are and how to have the strength to be that, which is ultimately what Wanda has to find the strength to accept reality and not, you know, live in her grief. And so many of the same themes and very, very different.
Yeah, it's so true. Oh my gosh. You know, one other random thing I read that I thought you'd like about Jack Schaefer. She said, people say a lot of really wonderful things about our show and that it's so groundbreaking and it's so original and it breaks rules. And she says, my response to that is go sit down and watch I May Destroy You. And I was like, wow, look at that. Yeah. And I also read something about what are you reading right now or watching that you love? And she said The Flight Attendant. So clearly we are on the same page as Jack Schaefer.
I love her. Jack Schaefer was one of those that went above and beyond for me. I was like, God, I want to be her. I need to see her.
Did you read that her dad basically told her when she was 12 years old that she should be a director? Like, he explained the job and was like, you'd be so good at that. And I'm like, why was nobody telling me like what I should, you know, consider being? I wouldn't even have known what that was then.
I did see that. And the funny thing was, it was because she wanted to be an actress. And he was like, well, if that's what you want to do, it wasn't like she's like, I'm going to be a lawyer. And he was like, no, you should be a director. He wasn't mansplaining. True. She was like, I want to be an actress. I want to be in movies. And he was like, okay, do that. But also learn how to direct and figure that out because you'd be good at it. And then you're in control and you have a much better career life. And that, I think, is brilliant.
Yeah, and then she like started, you know, reading Entertainment Weekly every week and like, you know, following Sundance and other film festivals. I mean, she's been motivated, ambitious person since an early age. It's pretty impressive. Yeah. And now she says running a writer's room and being a showrunner, she thought, you know, that directing was just what she always wanted to be. And then she had small kids, and it's not an easy job or role when you have that. But she's loving, she says, being a showrunner and being in a writer's room, which and she's sort of finding new love, which I thought was really cool.
I do too. I love that. She was impressive, very impressed with all of these women and these shows. So we have some work to do now.
We want to let you know we've launched a Patreon page where supporters can receive perks like bonus episodes and exclusive content.
Because Pop Fiction Women is our passion project, a place where we give women space to show up and offer in-depth analysis in the ways we're used to hearing about male creators and their characters.
We delve into creativity and psychology with a dash of astrology, and we have so much fun doing it. Just two friends breaking down books, movies, and shows like Normal People, Fleabag, and I May Destroy You.
Every single aspect of this podcast we do ourselves, from the preparation to the recording, from the editing to the social media promotion. So we're adding a Patreon platform because we want to keep making the show you love and hopefully expand it even further.
So please consider becoming one of our most complicated fans and contributing on Patreon.
To learn more, go to patreon.com/popfictionwomen.
This has been Pop Fiction Women with Corinne and Kate.
If you enjoyed this show, please tell the complicated women in your life.
And the men who love them.
Yes, tell them to listen. And then to follow on Spotify or review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And of course, share on social media.
Tag us with your favorite books, TV shows, and movies starring complicated women on Facebook and Instagram at Pop Fiction Women, or on Twitter at pop_women.
For more coverage of the women you love, or to find out if you qualify as a complicated woman, go to popfictionwomen.com.
And keep it complicated.